Tonight, I am delighted to introduce Darrell Price, A Course in Miracles teacher and practitioner, speaking about A Course in Miracles, a Christian-oriented, non-dualist path to enlightenment. Darrell has been a face that has brightened our store many times over the past, but I think this will be his first opportunity to share this forum officially. And so I've been looking forward to that. The whole staff has been looking forward to this event. He's worked with the Course in Miracles since 1984, has spent 7 years in deep contemplation and study of the Course at Endeavor Academy, an ashram in southern Wisconsin based on the Course, and has taught classes and workshops on the Course over 20 years. We are delighted to welcome you here. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Right. Well, let's see. First thing I'd like to do is find out how familiar everybody is with the Course. How many of you people have never heard of A Course in Miracles till recently? Okay, so everybody has some familiar... Oh, okay.
I'm very interested.
You're very interested. Okay. How many of you have actually have done or are doing the Course, which means you're doing the workbook or you have done the workbook and you've read the text?
How much of it?
Well, let's say at least less than one. Okay. All right. And then how many of you probably heard of the Course, maybe done a little bit of reading either about it, read one of the books that are written about the Course? There's a few of you. Okay. All right. And you have two. Okay. Well, I'm going to try and, you know, the Course is a profound spiritual teaching, and like all profound spiritual teachings, it's like you can't just talk about it academically. You kind of got to go into it, you know. So tonight I'm going to kind of try to go into it and convey a bit that feeling and that intensity, that energy that is the Course. I'm going to cover the main concepts and its purpose and just see it's a profound teaching. It's very dense. There's not a wasted sentence. I think it's about 1,250 pages. Very holographic. Every idea flips back into or reflects the other ideas. One idea leads into another, so the talk's going to be kind of elliptical. I might start out somewhat linear, but then I'm going to go off on a tangent, and then I'll come back and pick it up. So there's really no other way to talk about it other than to kind of flow with it. And I'll do my best as well to just let what I'm saying be guided. And one of the main things the Course wants to teach is to get you in touch. I call it, I'm going to speak in a generic sense, the guidance principle in a higher part of your mind. The Course calls it the Holy Spirit. And that is like, also calls it the voice for God. That is like the link between your creative source, the truth of what you are, which is the one unity, and the mind that seems to apparently find itself associated or in a separate body, in a world of separation with pain, sickness, suffering, death, etc. I call it the guidance principle, and also the Holy Spirit is what the Course teaches it. So I'll do my best to kind of let myself be guided tonight, because I don't want to blab to you guys from what I think. I want to try and come from that highest place in mind. And, okay, because we have varying degrees of familiarity with the Course, I'm going to kind of move fairly quickly and intensely. If you can't follow me, or if you need me to repeat something, raise your hand. We'll see if we can keep it moving because we don't have a lot of time, but I'll see what I can do with it. And should I go very quickly just a short history of the Course for those who aren't real familiar? Okay, the Course is a scribe teaching. It's from the mind of Jesus of Nazareth, and it was given to a woman, a clinical psychologist named Helen Schuckman, who was teaching and working at Columbia University back in 1965. And it sort of came as a response to her despair at the conflict she was experiencing in her professional life. You know, in human life, it seems like when there's more than two people trying to get something done, everybody's got their own ideas, there's very often friction. She's experienced a lot of conflict. She and her good friend, a PhD in psychology, clinical psychology, a colleague, were both kind of upset about it. She said there must be a better way. And this is like what opened the door. And then within a short time, she began to hear a voice in her head. Now, it wasn't channeled. Again, it was like the revelation, you could say, in the Old Testament, where the voice is heard in full consciousness. And, of course, being a psychologist, she thought she was losing her mind. That's one of the definitions of insanity, is when you hear voices in your head. So that was kind of funny that Jesus picked a psychologist to speak to. Obviously, he's got a sense of humor, even though people don't think about him that way. And she manages to kind of get over, you know, her fear with the help of William Thetford, and then she started writing it down. It took 7 years, and that was finally published in 1975. Okay, and the structure of the course, again, for you guys who are unfamiliar, it has three parts, three volumes. It has a text. Yeah, it took her 7 years to scribe it, 1965 and 1972. It took them about 3 years before they published it. 1975, they began to publish it. So it's been published now for what? This is 34th year. Okay. And the structure of it, basically, there's a text which covers all the main ideas. You could say the theology of it, the metaphysics of it, all the other information it's presenting. Then there's a workbook that has 300. Is this distracting you guys and I'm wandering back and forth?
No.
Yeah, it's okay. All right. Kind of keep the eyes moving. I might keep them falling asleep, too. So that's another reason. Kind of keep people's attention if you keep moving. That's probably a fundamental principle. Okay, then there's the workbook. Now, the text presents all the main ideas. And beautifully written, actually. Much of the course is written in iambic pentameter. A friend of mine at the academy, who was actually a teacher of creative writing before he came to the academy, discovered that. He put out a little book on it, self-published book. A lot of people don't know that. But iambic pentameter is that rhythm of language, I guess, involving repeating such and such every fifth syllable. I'm not sure. Maybe some of you guys know better than me. Shakespeare wrote in iambic pentameter, etc., etc. So the language of the course is very beautiful and at the same time, very dense. There's not a wasted sentence. So we have the text, and the workbook has 365 lessons, one for every day of the year. And Jesus asked you, if you want to do the course, he asked you to do the workbook. That, you could say, is the core of the course. Because the text, and in the third part, the teacher's manual, are necessary to give you some idea of what the course is about, et cetera, et cetera. But it's doing the workbook, doing the spiritual exercises, as anybody involved in any kind of spiritual discipline will tell you, that makes the goal of the course possible. Now, the lessons each have a central idea. There's actually not 365 central ideas. Certain fundamental ideas are repeated, but there's a lot of them. And there are different exercises that you do with the workbook. Some days it's more of a meditation. Some days it's more of an act of contemplation. It's a whole gamut of spiritual exercises over the course of that year. Nobody does it in a year, by the way. Almost everybody takes a little longer. But over the course of that time, there's a whole series of spiritual exercises that you do. So the way Jesus puts it in the course, he says, text is necessary to give you the presentation of the basic ideas, but the workbook, doing the workbook, is what makes all of the course possible. And the teacher's manual also covers some of the main ideas that are covered in the other two. It does them in a little simpler fashion, and it's quite short. It's often the part that people read first. All right. Any questions so far? Okay. So that's probably enough about the history. Now, why do the course? There's a real simple little thing here in chapter 24, the title of chapter 24 is The Goal of Specialness, that explains very simply the motivation for doing the Course in Miracles. Okay, forget not that the motivation for this course is the attainment and the keeping of the state of peace. Given this state, the mind is quiet, and the condition in which God is remembered is attained. Because Jesus is talking about a profound state of peace, the state of peace that's associated with what you call spiritual awakening. He's not talking about the normal human idea of peace. Normally, when a person feels peaceful, it means there's no conflict in their conscious mind. But he's talking about something much deeper than that. And the Course as well, the condition in which God is remembered. The Course presents the final experience of awakening, as one in which you come to the end of learning and God takes the last step. The world disappears, you disappear, and of that we cannot really speak. That's presented as the final experience in the awakening, as we were talking about. Now, I want to read one more thing to learn this course. What is required to learn this course? And that's actually, I think that's what's said here is what's required to learn any spiritual teaching, to follow any spiritual discipline to the point of awakening. Again, the Course is very, very universal in that. To learn this Course requires willingness to question every value that you hold. Not one can be kept hidden and obscure, but it will jeopardize your learning. No belief is neutral. And there's a lesson in the Course where it says, I have no neutral thoughts. Every belief has the power to dictate each decision you make. For a decision is a conclusion based on everything that you believe. Okay, so to learn the Course requires willingness to question every value that you hold. And why is that? Well, Jesus says that basically, again, the human understanding of virtually everything, anything, especially everything in relationship to truth, is exactly 180 degrees turned around from the way it really is. Okay, again, the picture of our human understanding that's presented in the Course is not very flattering. It's very, very unsparing, very, very, say, relentlessly uncompromising, and very, very honest. And that is one thing sometimes that drives people away from the Course, but it's also one of the things that attracts people to the Course. And maybe I just want to say one more thing here about that. Again, the point is made in the Course that this is only one form of the universal Course. There's a universal curriculum that everybody has to learn in order to awaken to the truth of their being, and what we call truth or reality. And there are different forms of a universal Course that vary from person to person, society to society, time to time. There's many different forms, obviously. And the Course is just one form. It's a special form. And if you're drawn to the Course, then that's the one for you. In fact, Jesus makes the point in the teacher's manual. He talks about free will. He says free will doesn't mean that we can choose the curriculum. The truth was established by God as it was through God's creation. Or if you're one of the traditions that don't use the word God, the truth is established by virtue of itself, by virtue of the fact that it exists. The truth is the truth, nothing else is true. So we can't choose the curriculum, because the truth doesn't change no matter who you are, where you are, and when you are. But we can choose when we want to learn it, or when we want to learn a given lesson. And he makes a point, actually, in the teacher's manual, we can't even really choose the form. There is one form that is most ideally suited to bring us to our awakening, to our natural state. There's one form that will take you at least the last part of the journey. I know nowadays a lot of people start out one place and move around, and that can definitely have its value. But at some point, usually a commitment to a particular teaching is necessary, and you got to follow that to the end. So that's another way of saying that. All right. Now the purpose of the Course. Excuse me a moment. I just drink a little water. Purpose of the Course. Well, the purpose of the Course is to undo the mind, undo the human mind. I call it the human mind, the ego mind, the personal mind. The human identity, they're all different terms for the same thing. And, I guess the way my teacher used to put it, he used to say, you are the problem and you are the solution. And a way to paraphrase that, I would say, the presence of you, the experience of you as a separate human identity in a body, right, limited in time and space, is fundamentally the absence of you as the universal oneness or unity or beingness. So it's kind of like there's one or the other, and maybe another way to put it, you can't serve two masters. You generally have to choose one or the other. So the process of awakening presented by the Course, and from what I can see, I like all the Eastern teachings as well, from what I've read, again, it's pretty universal. The process of awakening always includes the undoing of you, of your mind, of your belief system, your values, of what you hold dear, of your understanding, and at some fundamental place in the journey, you literally have to give everything up, including yourself, with a small s. That is what's required of you. And again, to the human mind, that seems to be sacrifice. It is, as long as you value it. But if you proceed, for example, if you work with the Course, you proceed in that process of doing the spiritual discipline and doing the work and being undone, you begin to realize that what you're giving up really has no value. I mean, what you're moving to is the only thing that is valuable. The only thing that really has value is the truth of our being, and everything else is temporary, and we can use it, and you know, blah, blah, blah. But the only thing that really has value is the truth of what you are. All right, the Course is very uncompromising in that. So the purpose of the Course, like I say, is to undo your mind. The Course is not a doing, it's an undoing. And Jesus uses the term atonement, and by that he means undoing or correction. He wants to undo the mind, the human mind, the way it is and thinks, undo your perception, the way you perceive. Because it is the mind and the beliefs and the thinking that determines our experience. It doesn't really seem like that, but that's really the way it is. Yeah, this might be a good time to go into this other concept. The inner and the outer, for example. What the Course teaches, again, as human minds, you experience sort of an inner mind, don't you? A private mind. It seems to be bound by this skull. Seems to take place in that little bowl of jelly in there we call the brain, right? Seems to be located in a body. It's separate from every other mind. That's like the inner movement, thoughts, feelings. And then you have the outer world, right? That your eyes perceive, you hear it, you smell it, you touch it, you feel it. The point made in the Course is that that distinction, actually, I think all the other Enlightenment traditions too, that distinction is unreal. There really is no separation between the inner and the outer. It's one thing, it's one movement. Although the inner is the cause of the outer. The inner is the cause of the outer. And cause and effect are never separate, and they are simultaneous. So there's one movement which seems to start here, and the outer appears as if it's separate from you, as if you have no control over it, and that's not really true. It's literally projected out of your head or out of your mind. This universe is a hologram too, and every part of it is projecting a whole. And then we share the dream of separation, witness it back and forth, and make it more real to ourselves. So we are literally dreaming. We are literally dreaming. Yeah, that's a popular thought. So Jesus says in the Course, the point he makes, you literally go from waking, or rather from sleeping dream to waking dream. You go from dream to dream. We think we're sleeping at night. Yeah. At night we think we're, let's say you're sleeping in your bed, right? You're lying in your jammies, you got the covers over, it's dark. And you dream, and in your dream you're walking down a street. And there's a sidewalk, and there's buildings, and you know, and there's light, and maybe you see the sun up in the sky. People are walking by you. You go by a laundromat. Guy comes out, asks you for change for a buck for the dryer. It all seems very real, doesn't it? All this world in your dream seems to be outside your mind, and you have a location in the dream. You have an identity and a sense of body. And someone walks into your dream and tells you you're dreaming. You're probably not going to believe them, are you? But then you wake up, and when you wake up, you realize you're back in your bed. Then you know you're dreaming. Okay, well, there's an analogy between the sleeping dream and the waking dream. It's not totally congruent, but it's similar. In the waking dream, again, time and space, as taught in the Course and in some other traditions, are in the mind. And the mind gives itself an identity, a body, a location in time and space, and puts everything else outside of itself as if it's separate. And it sure seems real, doesn't it? You step in front of a truck, it's going to flatten you. It seems real. It seems very real. Illusions are as real in their effects as is the truth. With any illusory system, the system makes sense. It makes sense in every sense of the word. And the only way you can discover that it's a dream is to wake up. And then when your experience extends beyond the dream, and you begin to see the unreal nature of this, or you have the experience that's projected out of your mind, then you know that Jesus isn't just whistling Dixie, that it's true. It's true. And that's the kind of concept the mind can't really wrap itself around, the conceptual mind. There's no way really we can grasp that, because the experience of that comes from beyond the dualistic mind. It comes from the unity. All we can do, if for those who are interested and are on a serious spiritual journey, is leave your mind open to that fact and do your practice. And sooner or later, you begin to have that experience. Okay. So how does the Course undo your mind? Well, there's a very central and fundamental practice to the Course, which actually is quite similar to something Jesus was teaching 2,000 years ago. That is forgiveness. The way the Course undoes your mind, I mean, there's different things going on, is it has you practice forgiveness. Okay, but what Jesus means by forgiveness is not the same thing as what the human mind means by forgiveness. Okay, when we forgive somebody, what do we forgive? We forgive something that we think they did to us. So we think we were actually... Let's see, I think I was actually attacked. I actually suffered loss. Something actually happened. My brother actually did something to me that hurt me. Okay. So I think my brother is real and separate from me. I'm real and separate from my brother and everything else. And I actually suffered loss. So in the human sense, what I'm asked to forgive is something that's real. Something that actually happened. Not so, says A Course in Miracles. In the Course, you are not asked to forgive something that's real. In the Course, forgiveness, as taught by Jesus and by the Course, forgiveness involves the recognition that what you thought was done to you never occurred. Well, let me give you a couple of quick definitions of forgiveness. First definition, forgiveness is the recognition that what you thought your brother did never occurred. Okay, because this is a dream. Remember, we were talking about that a moment ago, how this is a dream. None of this is real. There's really nothing going on. And I'm going to read a few things about forgiveness from Lesson 134. The title of that lesson is Let Me Perceive Forgiveness As It Is. And this is getting into a little of what I just said. Let us review the meaning of forgive, for it is apt to be distorted and to be perceived as something that entails an unfair sacrifice of righteous wrath, a gift unjustified and undeserved, and a complete denial of the truth. Again, this is the way the human mind kind of looks at forgiveness. We think we are forgiving something that's real, that really happened to us. And actually, Jesus makes a point. If what happened to you was real, you can never really forgive it. You can forget it. You can put it behind you, but you can't really forgive it. Okay. The major difficulty that we as humans find in genuine forgiveness is you still believe you must forgive the truth and not illusions. And now we kind of come to a... We're going to loop even to a... Take it real back personally. Because you think your sins are real. This gets to the question, the whole question of sin or guilt. You look on pardon as deception. For it's impossible to think of sin, so I'll also use the term guilt, and not believe forgiveness is a lie. Okay. And then he says, forgiveness is the only thing that stands for truth in the illusions of the world. So Jesus makes the point, everything in the world is an illusion. Everything. Even forgiveness is an illusion, because if nothing's happening, I mean, and you're forgiving something that didn't happen, so even forgiveness in a sense is an illusion. But forgiveness is the illusion that replaces all the other illusions. And forgiveness is the one illusion that does not perpetuate the whole cycle of illusion. The practice of forgiveness, as is taught in the Course, all other illusions will finally be brought to the altar of forgiveness and laid there, and the only illusion that will remain is the illusion of forgiveness. Okay, and forgiveness, I just want to read one more thing here. Forgiveness joins your mind with the reality in you. Another thing about forgiveness I want to mention. At another place in the Course, I think it's the teacher's manual, Jesus says that, he talks about what he calls the state of heaven. By the state of heaven, he doesn't mean a place with pearly gates or any of that sort of thing. He means a state of mind, a state of being, your original and your true state of total unity and oneness with your creative source and with yourself in your totality. It is a state described in various Eastern teachings, I guess as the absolute ground of being, etc., etc. Jesus uses the term heaven. And love, as it exists in that absolute state, the closest that love in this world comes to love as it exists in the absolute level is forgiveness. So you could say forgiveness is a reflection of love in that highest sense. So again, even though forgiveness is an illusion, it is an extremely useful illusion, and in forgiveness, the truth is reflected, and love is reflected. And that's what makes it so powerful in terms of helping undo our mind and taking us out of here. Now there's another definition of forgiveness that's given. This is like a little wider than the other one.
Darryl, I'm sorry.
Question.
When you say taking us out of here, do you mean literally or taking us out of here?
Yeah, I mean eventually, literally, in terms of... In your awakening, you find out that you're literally beyond time and space, and you're beyond the body. And ultimately, again, the way the Course presents it, ultimately, I think in India as well, you reach a point of awakening, at which point you can step off the wheel, right? The wheel of birth, life, death, and rebirth, as they talk about it in the East. So I use the term take you out of here, get you out of here, both in terms of a final awakening in which you're no longer bound. I mean, I use that particular construct. Others may use others. And I also use it in the sense of waking up to the truth of your being, because what you really are extends beyond time and space. Does that help? Okay. Second definition of forgiveness. Total forgiveness, again, is the recognition that there's nothing to forgive. If this is a dream, I was talking a little earlier, this is a dream, it's not real, nothing's happening here, nobody's doing anything to anybody, it just seems to be. If this is a dream, then total forgiveness is a recognition there's nothing to forgive. And the third definition of forgiveness that I'll use, and I consider this sort of an advanced definition, forgiveness is the healing of the perception of separation. So again, in the Course, everything leads to the same place, all the concepts. So if forgiveness is the act of the healing of the perception of separation, what does that mean? That means in that healing of that perception of separation, I'm experiencing my oneness. I'm experiencing the unity, say, of myself with the person or the object or the circumstances that I forgive. So in that sense, the act of forgiveness is the actual, if you want to call it spiritual experience or true experience of the truth of your being, which is that there is no separation. Your bodies do not keep you separate. They just appear to keep you separate. Okay, any questions on forgiveness? Forgiveness? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The argument that forgiveness is not necessary because it's all a dream seems to...
No, I didn't say that.
Oh, would you clarify that for me?
Oh, okay.
What I misunderstood there.
Oh, okay. If I said that, I wasn't paying attention to myself. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Does enough of what I said ring close to something you said that you recognize
what stimulated that? Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah, I think I know what you're saying. Yeah, the two definitions of forgiveness I gave. See, it's not simply a concept. When I say forgiveness, for example, let's say I think you do something to me, maybe you insult me, right? Mm-hmm. And so my mind thinks, oh, I've been hurt, I've been attacked. Okay. So let's say I'm practicing the course. So I come up with the idea then, I'm practicing forgiveness. Obviously, I have to forgive my brother. What is forgiveness? It's a recognition that what I thought you did never occurred. Okay? I still, yeah, I have to, for example, I have to recognize that you didn't really attack me, but it's not just enough to tell myself that. There's that sense in the mind, this is hard to describe, that I've been attacked, and there is an action of mind that is required there. And I can't really describe that. There is an action, you could say, of mind and heart. And that gets back to sort of the awakening, that gets back to a kind of a willingness, a kind of change that happens. Forgiveness, as the Course teaches it, again, we can't practice it really just as humans. We have to get, again, the Course teaches again and again for you to ask for help. You work with that help, the Holy Spirit, in that higher part of your mind.
Then I'm still confused about the part that says nothing really happened.
Mm-hmm.
Where is one standing when one says that nothing really happened? What's the frame of reference that that's true within?
Yeah, that's a real good question. Well, the frame of reference basically for that is to remember the truth of your being and hopefully experience it, that you're not a body, right? That your mind and your being, your spirit.
Do you mean that we're not only a body, or that the body is not us, when you say you're not a body?
Yeah, the body is not you.
It's mm-hmm. What? What is the body?
You could say the body is an image, a thought form. Again, it seems very real. Yeah, I don't think I can go very far. I hear what you're saying. I can't go real far along that line of reasoning because I probably can't give you a good reason. I mean, a good explanation. Yeah, I might have to stop here. Mm-hmm. Again, the practice of forgiveness, it's central to the Course. It's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing to grasp, and it's not an easy thing to do. But it does involve a release in your mind.
I can go to a place where I can appreciate mm-hmm. That if this, at some level, mm-hmm. if the body is transitory or illusory in mm-hmm. some sense, then I can stand, at least in my mind, I can stand in another place and say, well, there is no forgiveness needed because mm-hmm. there is no harm done.
Mm-hmm.
But if the supposed harm existed only in the mind,
mm-hmm.
does that invalidate it? Does that say that, because it existed only in the mind, then it wasn't real?
I'm not following you there.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I should withdraw the question for now.
No, that's a good question, yeah, but it could take a long time for us to go into that one. I don't know if we have a lot of time. I'm sorry that I can't do a better job.
I'm just trying to get a sense of the basis of reality or whatever
yeah.
might be.
Well, again, the practice of forgiveness in the Course is dependent upon, like with any spiritual practice, you accepting certain principles. Like you said, going to that place in your mind where you realize this is a dream. It doesn't have any, let's say, lasting effect.
Mm-hmm.
You're being asked to be willing to go to that place, be willing to practice it. Jesus gives you several different ways to practice it, maybe when it's still more conceptual. Mm-hmm. But again, it's not a matter of just ignoring it. You know, you have to respond, but you have to respond, let's say, with a true thought, and then there is a movement that happens in your mind. I can't really describe that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on that, remember that third definition I gave you, forgiveness, where, for example, with that, let's say you did something and I, for a moment, thought you hurt me. The practice of that one, I would just, with my mind, you know, spiritual vision is with your mind. I guess they call that the third eye, too. It's not with the eyes. My mind, I would look past the body, and I would see you for what you are, and all I would see is light, okay? And that light immediately joins me, and I experience our unity, okay? And that is an act of forgiveness. How can I then have any feeling of antipathy or grievance towards you if I experience directly that you're me? And also, if I see the light that you are, that you look at anybody, look at anything, look past the form, all you see is this beautiful light. When you see that light, it's the same light everywhere and everything and everybody. And that's what everybody really is. Again, that's another part of the practice of forgiveness. Jesus wants you to keep ultimately practicing looking past the body and looking and remembering the truth of what your brother is. See, ultimately, the course, I think, like all the other spiritual disciplines, and maybe Stuart and Robin, correct me if I'm wrong on that, requires a continuous moment-to-moment awareness, right? Isn't that where, like the spiritual discipline that you guys teach? You want anybody practicing that has to be aware, moment-to-moment, minute-to-minute, hour-to-hour. You never have a moment off, really, in a sense, do you? And so the course will require that, too. And eventually it requires a lot of you, because that takes all of your willingness and all of your mind and heart to do. Question?
I'm seeing a call to take the step beyond judging.
Mm-hmm.
Before there is a need for forgiveness, I think there's a need.
Yeah, judgment first occurs, doesn't it?
Judgment of wrongdoing, which needs correcting. And of course, wrongdoing is a perception, a judgment. So you were being invited to maybe shift her position, even ever so slightly, relative to something that we're judging.
Now you can look upon it that way.
Maybe it's only in this one very staid perspective that this thing requires forgiveness in the first place. And if you just shift your perspective, it just doesn't. So it's like expanding your point of reference.
Yeah, you could. I'm not sure if I know exactly, but I think I'm getting a sense of what you're saying. Again, that's part of this. This whole subject of forgiveness is just very, very deep. It's very comprehensive. It takes in all of life. It involves the whole concept of guilt or sin. See, you can't feel that someone has attacked or hurt you unless you see them as guilty or bad. For example, if a surgeon operates on you and cuts out something that's causing you pain, he's just cut your body open, hadn't he? You don't see that as an attack, right? You don't see him as bad. One of the things the Course teaches is that it is our projection of guilt outward, our judgment, that makes things bad. Now, of course, again, the Course means that in a completely uncompromising sense.
I think that actually answers the question Carl had, because it's not attack against us. It's just something they did.
Yeah. Yeah, in a sense. Again, this what the Course is trying to teach us always is to remember the truth of what we are and the truth of what our brother is, and to, in effect, overlook all the things that seem to be happening. The Course asks you to remember that your brother, and I use the term brother generically for those of you guys who may wonder why I keep using the male term. The Course uses the term brother generically, meaning your fellow human beings. Okay? But ultimately, again, it just keeps going further and further. I'm going to just take another step with this? The Course teaches your brother is always offering you something. Everybody is always offering or giving you something. Everything. And of course, the focus tends to be more on the human interactions and our human brothers. Every person you come into contact with, you guys are all giving me something, I'm giving you something, and you're giving each other something. You could say it's like a constant communication. And it's up to you to choose what your brother is giving you. This might be a little bit of a tricky concept, but I think I'm going to go for it. Okay. Now you can choose what your brother gives to you. For example, and you choose what your brother gives to you by how you see your brother. So I look at you, and if I see you as a body, what you're giving me is a confirmation that I'm a body, okay, that I'm separate from my creative source, etc., etc. That is then the gift that I choose from you, and that's what we do in our normal human state of mind. We're continually choosing the gift that our brother gives to us, brother witnesses back to us, reflects back to us that we are a body, we are limited, etc., etc., and everything that goes with that. What goes with that? Pain, sickness, suffering, and death. Some good things too, but, you know, up and down, etc., etc., chaos. All right. Or, you look at your brother, you can choose. Again, this is the Course attempts to bring all its students to that point, calls that the vision of Christ. Whereas, just what I was talking about a little earlier, where when you look at your brother, you're not just looking with your physical eyes. These are designed to see your see another body, see it separate. You look with your mind. You look with your hopefully awakening mind, your spiritual vision, and you see that one light. Okay, now when I look at you and I see that, then what you are giving me is something entirely different. You are confirming to me the truth of what I am, and in that seeing, as I mentioned earlier, we experience our oneness. Okay, and that is the greatest gift you can give me. Well, actually, it doesn't matter if you're doing this with all your fellow human beings as you go through the day. It doesn't matter. People often aren't aware that that's what necessarily is happening, but nonetheless, on some level of mind, they are experiencing that oneness, and that remains with them until they need it, or until they're willing. Okay.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I think I really think a lot about forgiveness, and I try to look at my heart rather than my mind. I've been really moving my mind into my heart. Mm-hmm. But my two things. Thinking about like what Christ said when he was on the cross,
mm-hmm.
forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about the doing, you know, what you were talking about, nothing's really done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about protecting, sort of say a prayer and a vow to protect those who are smaller and weaker than myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm dealing with an issue right now where I'm trying to protect some elders who are very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
What I get from my guidance is it's about compassion. The mm-hmm. truth is really about love, and when I can see whoever I was thinking of as the enemy, but really mm-hmm. understand them
mm-hmm.
with compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out how that relates to what you're saying.
Well, do you remember what I said a little earlier, that forgiveness is the closest we come to love as it exists in that absolute? The act of forgiveness is an act of love. Again, what I was saying a little earlier, I couldn't really put it into words, but forgiveness involves an action of your mind. When I say your mind, I'm not talking about your intellect. I'm not talking about your monkey mind. Your heart is part of your awareness. It's part of mind. And in Eastern traditions, they talk about, I think in Vedanta, they talk about the mind actually arises from the heart. You have a heart center, a spark of light or something, and so on and so on. So I'm actually including all that in one thing. But the practice of forgiveness, it's take a tremendous willingness on your part and a willingness to love your brothers. Absolutely. It is not in any way separate from love. It is not some abstract, sterile exercise. Again, it may sound like that because I'm using concepts and stumbling around here trying to, you know, present it, but it's not an easy thing to grok. That's the thing about all the main ideas in the Course. They're 180 or 270 degrees different than what the human thinks. And many of these ideas we can't really grasp them unless we practice them or unless we experience them. But they become active in your mind, and they become self-evident as you have that experience. We can only go so far with our conceptual understanding. Whether it's me standing up here blabbering about it, or whether you're reading yourself, we can only go so far with our conceptual understanding.
So there's not really saying at all, none of this is real, so don't do anything to help anybody.
No. Again, see that. Yeah, that would be that's what the human conceptual mind does. It grabs a concept, and then it justifies some kind of behavior. We are doers. We will act. We are called upon to act, right? And we are called upon to act with compassion and love and consideration and wisdom. And of course, in no way excludes that or tells you not to do that. Again, yeah, that is the problem often with these concepts. I come across it, especially the concept that the world is not real, it's a dream. You think, well, I can do anything I want. I can knock over the bank or whatever, but no, it's not true. Just saying it's not real doesn't make it not real. You're only freed from it when you awaken. And when you awaken, you know exactly how to act, and you act. And you act from that awakened, compassionate heart.
I just also wanted to validate what you're saying before, and I won't interrupt you again for one, of just that I've had the experience of being assaulted
mm-hmm.
and seeing the person as, you know, with compassion and with love and with light and the whole situation turned around.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that's a good point. The Course teaches that every action a human being takes, and you can see it's our words as well, is either an expression of love or a call for love. So any action that is not loving, again, is for those who are students of the Course and you want to practice this way, any action that is not loving, the response is to offer love. It also makes the point we don't hurt each other. Generally, the reason people hurt each other and attack each other is because they're in pain. Okay, we project out our pain. We act out our pain. If you feel fine and you feel loving and you feel very full and good and complete within yourself, you don't go around mistreating others, do you? I don't know if you guys have had experience with someone real violent. There are some individuals in our society, some people are real violent. When I was a young guy, I used to hang out with those guys, and what was striking to me was the fear and the pain I could see in them. They weren't bad in the sense of some inherent badness that was in them. You know, they were wounded, badly wounded. Badly wounded, badly shattered. And so they were projecting out and acting out their pain. Attacking their brothers. That's, you could say, how they relieved it. That's how they eased it. Okay, so, and again, not to get confused with the concept. I'm supposed to forgive my brother, and he or she does something that calls for love. It doesn't mean if I'm being abused that I stand there and be abused. No, you remove yourself from the situation. Always what's practical. The course is about the awakening in your mind. It teaches we change our mind. We change the way we see things, the way we understand things, the way we perceive things. And our experience, of course, in the awakening process and our experience of ourself and the world will change. The separation will disappear. And your behavior follows from changing your mind. So when you take a concept like the world's not real so I can go steal, you're trying to change your behavior, aren't you? I mean, you're just changing your behavior without changing your mind, and that doesn't work. All you're doing is justifying inflicting further pain on yourself and your fellow human beings. Yeah.
Isn't it that the ego is the illusion?
Yeah, the ego is fundamentally is. It's all of a piece in a sense. I think is the way the Course teaches. The idea of separation, which is what the ego is, and that whole identity and belief system that develops from that. Then this is a bit the theology of the metaphysics of the Course. There are different theologies, different ways of explaining it, but this is the way the Course explains it. In that process of separation, the body then is like the symbol of separation, isn't it? Because a body, by definition, is a form. It's different from other forms. It's in time and space. It's separate. And the body and the world rise together. It's not first there's a body and then there's a world. It's one movement. It's all of a piece. Yeah, exactly. The Course teaches you have two identities, right? And only one of them is real. You have the identity you gave yourself, the personal self-identity, which involves identifying with a body, identity of the intellect, the personal history, etc., likes, dislikes, all that whole movement, that constant movement, that kind of structure, if you want to call it. There's that identity. Jesus also refers to that as a self-image. And then you have your true identity, which is the one self. It's a term he uses. He also uses the term the Christ. In India, they talk about the self with a capital S. Again, it's self with a capital S. In Buddhism, I think it's what they call the Buddha nature, right? Or your primordial nature or the ground of being. I guess it depends on what branch of Buddhism you talk about. But that is the truth of your being. That is what is eternal. That is what you really are, and you are that right at this moment. So it's not like that goes away, but it's covered over. It's covered over. And the human mind in its sleeping state doesn't experience it because you are circumscribed, surrounded by ideas and thoughts about yourself that are not true. And I don't know. Should I go and... there's a number... We're running out of time here, but I'd like to... maybe I should... I guess take a few questions. If there's a few more, I'll try to do a little better job answering them than I did the last ones.
Why don't you just go on? You've had a lot of questions. I want to hear what you have to say.
Oh, okay.
I have a question. Have you experienced the state of unity?
Uh huh.
Why don't you please tell us what that experience was like?
You can't really describe it. You know, the head dissolves, mind dissolves, body dissolves. You know, there's different ways to see it. It seems to happen different ways. But you end up in the same territory, whether you follow, this is the way I would put it, whether you follow one of the Buddhist lines or Vedanta
or some of the other Indian bhakti lines, some sort of Christian mysticism course, and whatever, or your own way, you end up losing yourself in the same territory where you realize yourself doesn't exist. There's no personal self. You know, like it looks like there's somebody in here, but there isn't. You know, lights are on, but there's nobody home, is maybe the easiest way to say it. Right. And once that containment is shattered, then your mind just extends in all directions. That's maybe as good as that. And that's not a very good job, but that's where I'll leave it. Okay. There is no world. Did I talk about that, guy? Actually, I think I've kind of wandered in and out of that subject for quite a while. Maybe I won't mention that. I talked about self-identity versus real identity. I talked about inner versus outer. Okay, two emotions. Let me just, we'll wrap it up with two emotions. Jesus says there's only two emotions. There's love and there's fear, and only one of them is real. So which one do you think is real? Good answer. Good answer. Okay. And all the so-called negative emotions, right? Like anger, anxiety, hatred, you know, rage, depression, sadness, all of those are just variations on fear. That's what the Course teaches. So there's two emotions. And of course, also the point is made that at the very foundation of the egoic identity is fear and guilt. And I'm not going to, I don't really have enough time to go into this, and again, that gets more into the metaphysics. But right there at the foundation, now I suspect most people who've done a lot of work on themselves and have really gone deeply into their mind to where that separating, that sort of barrier that seems to exist between the conscious and the unconscious, where that starts to dissolve and you start to really look down into your mind, you'll feel there's a deep fear down there. It isn't necessarily fear of anything, but it's a fear. It's part of the very foundation of the egoic identity. And consequently, that's what the ego is based on. And anything based on fear, of course, so is it any surprise that there's conflict, etc., etc.? Fear casts its shadow across human life at all times, even if you're not conscious of it. That fear, until we heal that, is just casting a shadow across our lives and imposing certain limitations. So, of course, the Course, strangely enough, wants to move you towards love and healing fear. And Jesus makes a point, you made fear. You made fear. It like everything else, it's not real in a sense, but it's real to you because it's real in your mind and has real effects. But ultimately, it's not real. Only love is real. So we could even describe the spiritual journey as a journey from fear to love with the Course. And I think with that, we've run out of time. And thank you very much, guys. And you're very kind. Very kind. Come again. That's more programs.
Thank you so much.